Laudato Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
Today, Friday, March 21st, is the feast of St. Nicholas of Flue, patron of Switzerland. And these are today's headlines. The Sudanese army has recaptured the presidential palace in the capital, Khartoum. Christian churches in the Democratic Republic of Congo advocate for reconciliation and regional stability. And the vast church in Polynesia celebrates the Jubilee. In the Vatican, I'm Christopher Wells. In April 2023, long-standing tensions between the Sudanese armed forces and the Rapid Support Forces movement came to a head and erupted in a brutal civil war. Since then, at least 20,000 people have been killed, though the number is likely to be much higher, and more than 14 million people have been displaced. However, on Friday, March 21st, the Sudanese army recaptured the presidential palace in Khartoum, marking perhaps a turning point in the nearly two-year-long conflict. Kelsey Gussie tells us more.
Just shy of 2 years of fighting, the Sudanese army has recaptured the presidential palace in the capital city of Khartoum from the rival paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. With this, the army appears to be in a good position to once again take control of the capital city after it was ousted by the paramilitary group. The Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, has not offered a comment. The army spokesperson, Nabil Abdallah, explained that the army seized large quantities of equipment and weapons from the RSF. Abdallah also added that the army will continue fighting until victory is complete. The city of Khartoum was the location where the civil war began in Sudan, and it saw many of the largest clashes. The RSF maintained control of the capital and the western part of the country since the beginning of the conflict. In April 2023, the country was plunged into violence after long-standing tensions between the RSF and the country's army erupted in the capital, eventually expanding to other regions. Recapturing Khartoum would mark a major victory for the Sudanese armed forces and a turning point in the civil war. Additionally, the army has had success in parts of central Sudan over the last few weeks. Several attempts to establish peace have failed, as the rival forces express their commitment to continuing the fighting to gain control of strategic areas of the country. The almost two-year-long civil war has created the world's largest humanitarian crisis, according to the United Nations, as both the RSF and the Sudanese army are accused of human rights abuses. More than 30 million people are in need of aid, and 16 million of them are children, struggling to survive in devastating conditions. While the official number is unknown, at least 20,000 people have been killed and more than 14 million displaced. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
Staying in Africa, as diplomatic efforts are underway to broker a ceasefire in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Congolese churches advocating for reconciliation and regional stability continue to hold high-level meetings to involve all parties in their social pact for peace and coexistence in the Democratic Republic of Congo and the Great Lakes region. Lisa Zangarini tells us more.
Despite ongoing diplomatic efforts to restore peace and Rwandan and Congolese president's commitment for a ceasefire earlier this week, fighting continues in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. On March the 19th, the allegedly Rwandan-backed M23 movement seized the strategic town of Walikale in North Kivu, the farthest west town rebels have reached in their swift advance since January. This development came the day after a surprise meeting between Congolese President Felix Tshisekedi and his Rwandan counterpart Paul Kagame in Doha, Qatar, where they called on parties for an immediate ceasefire and agreed that the talks must continue in order to lay solid foundations for lasting peace, as envisaged by the Nairobi and Luanda peace processes in 2022. However, these diplomatic efforts have yet to translate into peace on the ground, where the M23 continues its territorial advances. Amidst the ongoing violence, a joint delegation of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of Congo and the Church of Christ in Congo is holding high-level meetings to involve all parties in their social pact for peace and coexistence. The peace roadmap first aims for internal reconciliation and then for regional peace, and has already led to meetings with Congolese President Tshisekedi and with the M23 rebels. The church has aimed to bring the voice of Congolese civil society to the international community, and in particular to the UN Security Council. On March the 19th, the delegation was received by French President Emmanuel Macron, who expressed his full support to the roadmap. I am Lisa Zengarini.
World Poetry Day occurs on March 21st, with this year's observance focused on the theme, Poetry for Unity and Peace. To mark the day, we celebrate some poems that express humanity's yearning for peace as the wars of the world continue to rage. Francesca Merlo has the story.
Denise Levitov calls on poets to use their words to challenge the dominant image of disaster. She urges for peace, not only the absence of war. Gregory Corso, too, condemns the madness of war. With his irony, he writes, O bomb, I love you. I want to kiss your clank, eat your boom. These words highlight the absurdity of conflict. And he continues, Bomb, you are as cruel as man makes you. It is clear that while political leaders discuss rearming, poets worldwide continue advocating for peace. Pope Francis, too, from his hospital bed, has echoed this call for peace and urged the disarming of words and minds. As Trappist monk and poet Thomas Merton writes, the God of peace is never glorified by human violence. Poetry, as a universal language, shapes a peaceful future, and religious verse has long played a role in fostering this sense of solidarity. Whether through the Psalms of David or Rumi's mystical verses, poetry unites us in a shared longing for peace. St. Francis of Assisi wrote one of the most beloved poetic prayers, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Mahmoud Darwish, Palestine's national poet, reminds us, as you prepare your breakfast, think of others. As you wage your wars, think of others. Do not forget those who seek peace. His words call for empathy in the face of conflict, while other war poets, like Wilfred Owen, denounce the glorification of war with his famous lines, My old friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, dulce et decorum est, pro patria mori. Let us continue, then, to share poetry as a means of peace. Let us be selective of the words we choose in a world in which the clatter of weapons threatens to drown out the cry for peace. After all, what we do and what we say shape us. The subtle truth, as Rumi said, is that whatever you love, you are. I'm Francesca Merlo.
A conference is currently underway here in the Vatican on the topic of risks and opportunities of AI for children. One of the event's main organizers is Father Hans Zollner, one of the Church's leading experts on safeguarding and prevention of sexual abuse. The German Jesuit priest, theologian, and psychologist spoke with Vatican Radio about the conference on AI and child safety that he had helped organize.
We have co-organized this conference from our Institute of Anthropology of the Pontifical Gregorian University, together with the Pontifical Academy for Sciences and the Childhood Foundation of Queen Silvia from Sweden. Why? Because it is important that we talk about the opportunities and the risk factors around artificial intelligence, especially for children and other vulnerable groups. We all participate in the digital world. We profit. We find many advantages in many services that probably we would miss a lot if we didn't have digital access and artificial intelligence and its tools. But there are huge risks connected to this tool and to all the possibilities connected to artificial intelligence. Therefore, we need to work together from different sectors, and the Catholic Church has an important role to play in bringing together people in Rome, using its convening power. And our institute is also engaged in connecting different sectors of research and different disciplines in research so that we can contribute from many sides, as many sides as possible, to a more protective environment and a protected one. A safer world, not a completely safe one, which will never exist as long as human beings are around, but at least one in which we limit the chances of harm and we help young people to grow up in a more protected and in a more responsible environment.
That was Father Hans Zollner. Finally, the Jubilee has taken on new life in the lands of French Polynesia in Oceania. The Archdiocese of Papeete, led by Archbishop Jean-Pierre Cotenceau, has designated 12 Jubilee parishes, including 7 on the island of Tahiti. Italian missionary Father Sandro Lafranconi of the Society of African Missions has spent years in the Leeward Islands. He spoke with Vatican Radio's Federico Piana about the practical challenges and great joys of serving this Jubilee in Oceania. Deborah Castellano-Lubov tells us more.
The Archdiocese of Papeete covers such an immense territory that Father Sandro Lafranconi uses a striking comparison to help those unfamiliar with this remote region in Oceania, specifically in French Polynesia, grasp its size. He says it spans a distance comparable to that between Tunisia and Scandinavia. It is the largest archdiocese in the entire Catholic Church, caring for over 100,000 faithful scattered across small urban settlements, thousands of kilometers apart. Is almost an adventure for him and the 23 other diocesan priests, supported by 50 deacons. Although these numbers are insufficient for the actual needs, they still allow the local church to remain vibrant. In each of these Leeward Islands, the missionary has a residence where he stays for a few days before traveling to the next destination. Journeys are always by plane, lasting at most 45 minutes, but covering vast distances. For the Holy Year, the Archbishop of Papeete has designated Jubilee parishes on the island of Tahiti and several others across the rest of the archdiocese. Among them is St. Andrew's Church and Ayathea, entrusted to the Italian missionary. In the interview, speaking with Vatican Media's Federico Piana, he said, "We began preparing for the Jubilee on Christmas night. In the Leeward Islands," he noted, "we placed a large anchor at the center of our nativity scenes to make it clear that the God who was born is the anchor of hope." He explains there is a significant presence of non-Catholics there, from Protestants to various sects, suggesting that in such a context, speaking of hope means believing that, beyond divisions, unity is possible, and that this Jubilee offers an opportunity to achieve it. But stated, the local church must also put this theological virtue into practice by addressing some of the most pressing social issues in recent years, such as widespread drug and alcohol abuse, particularly among young people, and the breakdown of families due to violence and marital infidelity. To overcome these seemingly insurmountable challenges, the missionary concluded, there is only one anchor of hope, God Himself. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
And that brings us just about to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. More on these and other stories, we invite you to visit our Vatican News web portal at www.vaticannews.va. You can also catch all the latest updates on our Facebook, X, and Instagram pages. Many thanks go to our sound technicians in the studio. In the Vatican, I'm Christopher Wells.